You are listening to Mike Seminary and Friends,
a Q1 Network production.
If you have dreams or you're wondering how to make a bigger impact in this world, you're home. Welcome to Mike Seminary and Friends. I'm Deb, Mike's wife. I suggested this idea as a way to keep him busy and out of my way after he retired. So far, it's working. Thanks for listening. It's time for Mike Seminary and Friends.
Welcome to Mike Seminary and Friends, the place where we strive to make a difference, a positive difference, provide you something of value. Heck, from my perspective, we just want to share good stuff. I'm your host, Mike Seminary, and I'm so grateful you've joined us. A big thanks to my friend David Hansen for my theme music, Continental Drift. Search for his work, Serotonin Waters and Moon Dot Soup, on iTunes and Spotify. By the way, I appreciate your comments and guest suggestions. Keep them coming at MikeSeminary.com or Mike Seminary and Friends on Facebook. And please visit us at Apple Podcasts and leave a review. Today, I'm so darn excited to have as my guest a friend of better than 50 years, frankly. And candidly, were it not for social media and its existence, I might have completely lost track of my dear friend, incredibly talented man, James Ford. James, welcome to Mike Seminary and Friends. It's great to see you. Thank you for taking time to join me. How are you?
I'm very well, Mike. Thanks so much for having me. It's a real pleasure. I'm kind of excited. Not kind of, I'm really excited.
Well, I am too. I've been thinking a lot about this after you agreed to do this, about so many directions we could go. And one of the reasons I really wanted to have you on, James, is as I've now followed you on social media, I've learned a lot more about the James Ford that, you know, I kind of lost track of so many years ago, and the way you have grown in so many ways because of the things that you pursue. And I just thought it'd be a lot of fun to share it. I want to go back a little bit first. I think we met for the first time when we were both juniors in high school. I don't remember meeting you prior to that.
I think that's correct. At Shanley.
Yeah. You had left the public school system, came over to Shanley, parochial school, run by the Christian Brothers, and we kind of hit it off and had a lot of fun during the course of that time, and we'll talk a little bit about that. After you graduated, or after we graduated, you went to the Navy, you served our country, thank you very much.
Yes, you're welcome.
And you came back to North Dakota for a little bit and graduated from NDSU. What did you study when you were in college?
I studied, I was getting the GI Bill. And so it was to my advantage to go to college. I was married. You know, I got married while I was, right after I got out of the Navy, my wife was still in the Navy. I met her in the Navy and we got married. We were both getting the GI Bill and going to North Dakota State University. It was a great time in my life. And I studied, I eventually got my degree in university studies because I just love academics, and I just kept going until my GI Bill ran out. So I have a Bachelor of University Studies, one of the first, I have a bus degree, Mike.
Did you participate in the tri-college thing at all, or straight NDSU curriculum?
I did, it was a straight NDSU curriculum. Afterwards, I did do because I loved academics so much, I did do a semester at the Morehead State University, and yeah, and I've been going to college, I mean, on and off. I've been to five different colleges and three different universities. You know, I just love going, you know, and so that's what I did.
So back to high school. One of the things that occurred to me, because of our love for music and specifically harmonica.
Right.
We used to spend time in the John playing harmonica.
And singing the national anthem.
And it was actually pretty good, I thought. But this is the thing I thought of, and I'm probably going to go to hell for this one, James. There was a time that we went into the library, and bless her soul, Sister Marie Philip, we one day took our harmonicas. You went to one end, I went to the other, and we'd play a couple notes, not simultaneously, and then Sister would go all the way to the end of the library. And then whoever was on the other side would play a little bit, and she'd go back and forth. We tortured that poor woman. I don't think we did it more than once, but I vividly recall it. And everybody in the library thought that was fairly hilarious, including me, by the way.
Me too.
You still play. You still play harmonica. We'll talk a little bit later about the current musical efforts of you and Ellen, your wife, and your new protege. I specifically want to talk about your pursuit of acting. You're one of the few people I know that really chased that career and had some success. When did you believe this is for me? This is what I have to chase. This is in me. I have to do this.
Well, that's kind of it's a simple question, but it's a kind of complicated answer. Because I remember when I was living still in Enderlin, North Dakota. Now we moved away from there when I was 6 years old, so it was a pretty early memory. And black and white TV, one or two channels that we would get, and I was watching Rin Tin Tin on television, and there was a little boy played, you know, I don't even remember the name of the little boy, but there was a little boy, he was Rin Tin Tin's best buddy, and the little boy got to dress in a cavalry uniform and play the part of Rin Tin Tin's best buddy in the cavalry, and I thought, oh, that's what I want to do. That's what I want. I could do better than that kid, you know, in my mind, that's what I thought. And so I took a wishbone that I had just won, in the wishbone at Thanksgiving, and you break the wishbone, and you get the big half, and then you get a wish. And I remember making a wish. I wish I could be that little boy on Rin Tin Tin. And then that kind of went away. And fast forward to getting asked to leave the Fargo Public Schools and brought into Shanley High School. I think that one of the greatest people in my life, one of the most, my mentor, was Brother Harold Andrew. Mm-hmm. And I think he was the best actor. I've studied acting all over the place, New York and Los Angeles and everywhere. And I think that Brother Andrew was the best acting teacher maybe that I've ever had. He was so, so cool. And he asked me to go out for that first play our junior year in high school. And after a very underwhelming 2 years at the public schools, I thought, well, I better turn things around here, and said yes and did. And I fell in love with it and never let it go since.
He was special, wasn't he?
Oh, he was great. He was so funny.
And then he did pottery in the kiln.
I know.
I mean, he was so talented, that guy.
He was so talented. I know. I just, I loved him. He was such a great guy.
Well, I early on saw your talents and others, you know, we were, and I agree with you, we were really blessed to have some educators in our school that had very deep, rich talents in music and theater and culture, the performing arts, Brother Andrew, Michael Collins, of course, and some others. And it was a real treat to be able to participate either in the play or the musical. And we had just talked about Camelot, which was the musical our senior year, which I have very fond memories of that performance with all the folks in it, including yourself. So after high school, did you keep pursuing opportunities to be in theater, plays, musicals? After the Navy,
yes, I did. I of course studied. What I was in the plays at North Dakota State University, even though I wasn't in the theater department. And, you know, they, I was very lucky and did a lot of lucky things. You know, my brother Harold Andrew gave me, you know, his pottery that he did. You know, I apparently I won this best actor thing at Shanley. He gave me the comedy and tragedy masks that he himself had made, and I was so proud. I wish I still had them. I don't know what happened to those, but I wish I still had them. And then same thing in college. I won a best actor's award in college and for One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And and I thought, well, this is going good, you know, but, you know, I mean, is this a classic big fish, small pond? I don't know. I got to try this in New York or Los Angeles, and eventually ended up in Los Angeles and then in New York eventually too, a little bit. So that's how that went.
So the fish from the smaller pond in North Dakota, you end up in New York and LA, and had some success in not just performing, but also playwright or screenwriting, excuse me.
Well, both actually. Yeah. I mean, if it was produced on the stage, it was a play. If it was filmed, we'd call it a screenplay.
What's the competitive atmosphere like in that LA footprint, where a lot of people were doing exactly what you were doing? They were chasing their dream. And like all things competitive, that's probably as nasty and competitive as it gets. What was that like in the beginning days for you?
Well, I guess it was, you know, that's a difficult question too, because it was great. It was great. I mean, there was some problems pursuing the, you know, the success of a TV show on network television or something like that. But there's tons and tons of like off Broadway, they would call it in New York. But, you know, we had Theater Row in Los Angeles, where there are theater after theater after theater, and you can produce your own projects. You can write them, you can produce them, you can act in them, you can do whatever you want. I mean, it's a really, and there's so many talented people that are willing to come in and work together with you on these projects. And so we were doing that. In fact, when I met my wife, Ellen, you know, I had a theater group that my friend and I had created. And it was really just so that we wouldn't have to pay an acting teacher to go to their classes anymore. We formed our own theater group, and it was mostly improvisational stuff. I asked Ellen to join. And we always had something going on. It was constantly always something going on. We were working all the time. And my friend Lauren Cameron, who's also a screenwriter, he's written quite a few big screen plays, but he's like my best buddy. And he and I had always had a improvisational group. He was primarily a writer, but he liked to act. And I was primarily an actor who also liked to write. And so it worked out well for us.
So when you were self-producing some of this work, how did you survive? How did you raise, did you have to raise money, or was it, you know, kind of like my friends that have been musicians in Nashville for a long time, and they're reasonably successful. They still really depend on tip jars. In Nashville, I think it's called Broadway, no band, no performer is paid to play. Like when I grew up, you have to survive on tip jars. Was it something similar to that?
Well, not in my case, at least. I can't speak for anyone else. But from in my case, you know, I do have a gift for gab, and I guess an okay personality. And that's what people tell me. And so I always had a job working in different sales capacities. And I met this very, very, very interesting guy named Nersis Bastagian. He was a Armenian guy that owned a rubbish company. And he asked me to come get James John, let me tell you something. You get me accounts, I'll pay you. And I said, well, then I don't have to come in. I don't have to do anything. I mean, no. James John, listen, you do this, I pay you good. Don't worry about it, you know? And so, so I did. I worked for him, and I didn't drive either, Mike. You know, back in those days, I only rode a bicycle all around Los Angeles. I was in such great shape, and I'd go up and down the alleys of Los Angeles, department buildings and stores and stuff like that. see what they had in the trash department. So I was getting sunshine and exercise at the same time, working my scripts or whatever I wanted to in my mind, or songs. And then looking at these trash things, and, you know, I mean, it was not very difficult to make money doing that. And so I always financed our own projects, you know, myself.
Hmm. One of the things that I so enjoy about your social media posts, and again, I'm so thankful that it exists, because I don't know how I would have been able to track you down or follow you nowadays, because that's just harder, right? Three things. One, you always are posting some of the most beautiful artwork that I've ever seen. I look forward to every single one of them. And then it's family. But one particular post I'll never forget, you had made reference to the library, that when you first got to Los Angeles and were getting your feet wet, so to speak, you would spend a lot of time in the library reading and to continue educating yourself. And I said to myself, that's brilliant for all sorts of reasons. First of all, we kind of stay out of trouble when we're in a library, unless you're pulling your harmonica out and playing, getting thrown out. But it's also a way of being a lifelong learner and taking in as much information as possible, because how that expands our universe. How much time did you actually spend in the library? You kind of lived there for a while, did you?
Well, I spent a lot of time in the library. It was free, you know. And then those were the days when I first got to Los Angeles, and you know, before I met this Armenian guy, and you know, I was, you know, I needed to make some money, and I didn't have much, so I spent a lot of time in the library, and I'd ride my bicycle to the library. I didn't need gas or, you know, money or anything like that, and. And then, of course, you know, I've always believed in, you know, more education, and not just education, but broadening and widening your perceptions in your mind, because my time in the military taught me that there might be a language barrier, but you know what? There's not a personality barrier. People are the same all over the world. No matter where you go, they love their children. They like to go to their local watering hole and have a drink after work and laugh it up with their friends. I mean, this is what life is. It's no different in Kaohsiung, Taiwan, Fargo, North Dakota, or Los Angeles, California. It's all the same. People are the same. You know, cultural and language barriers notwithstanding, they're just the same. And I just thought, well, this is very interesting. And, I think it was important for me to try to eliminate my prejudices and biases, because I had plenty. You know, we all do. We're culturally biased with the times we grow up, the climate of the times, you know. And so, I don't know. And Michael, you know, yes, we have been friends a long time. And I think one of the things that may have intrigued us about one another, and especially maybe, is I don't like being told what to do by anyone or anything. I don't like it. I like to make up my own mind. I know that sometimes that's been a detriment to me, particularly like in the corporate world, which I have never been part of very much. But and truth and beauty are the only things that I think, love, truth, and beauty are the only things that I think are important in this life. And those have been my pursuits my entire life. Love, truth, and beauty. I found love with I'm just so lucky. I mean, we've talked about that a little bit, you and I. We got so lucky with our wives. Twice I got lucky with my wives, you know, but my wife Ellen is my partner, my friend, my everything. And and I think it's because I've tried to hold on to that ideal of truth, beauty, and love. I mean, because love is the only thing I believe that we take with us out of this life.
Yeah. It clearly, if we've done it half-ass well, it's the relationships we leave behind when we've finally gone, that's really our legacy, that people can say, you know, this James Ford, or this James and Ellen, or whatever the case might be. And if we've treated people with love, care, and respect, what more can we ask for, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you look at, even though your career is still evolving, you're not done. And I'm looking forward to the clips that you'll send me. When you look back at, you know, the peak of your performance acting career, what's really the highlight for you? And then, two-part question, any of your children pursue the same thing?
Yes. I mean, well, I suppose I've had some nominal successes in terms of, you know, like, I mean, I've been paid for a few of the acting roles that I've done, paid well and stuff like that. But that wasn't really my, to the crux of the point of the question that you just asked. I think my greatest success, I think one of them was when I did One Flew Over, no, I'm sorry, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? I opened the Littleton Town Hall Theater. Marvin Davis of Procter & Gamble fame, that rich guy lives in Denver, and he was the benefactor for the town Littleton Town Hall, and they opened that up in, I think it was 1984, maybe. And I got to do the inaugural play there. That was a big deal. I was kind of like, whoa, you know? And then when I wrote a play called The Miscreant with my son, Corey, when he moved to Los Angeles when he was 20 years old and he wanted to pursue writing, he was a little, I think, awed and maybe dumbstruck a little bit by the, you know, celebrity status of some of the people that he would meet out here. And I just told him, I said, no, Corey, no. This is not, it's not difficult to write a play. It's very difficult to write a good one. But it's not difficult to write a play. So let's do that. You write 10 pages, I'll write 10 pages a week. And we'll meet on Wednesday, and then we'll go over the 10 pages, we'll pare it down and decide what to keep, what to get rid of, and we'll go from there. So we did. We ended up writing a play called The Miscreant, and we put it up at this theater group that I belonged to at the time called the Black Box Theater, the Coop. And it was so fun. I mean, I was in the play, so I had to steal glimpses of my son in the audience, you know, from the stage, which wasn't that professional, I suppose. But it was so thrilling to watch my son watch professional actors perform his words at 20 years old and kind of go, oh, wow. So that was one of the, I think, I don't know. There have been many. I don't know, Mike. I've had a lot. You know, and the show that we recently did, Ellen Clare and I, at the old folks' home, not too far from here, and that was a music show, not an acting show, but it was also, because, you know, these old people, that with tears in their eyes, they're singing along, especially with the girls as they sang, because they're just angels. They sing with such beautiful voices. And these old people with tears in their eyes are singing along. And, I mean, I have to tell you that that was one of the best experiences of my life. So yeah, when you say that I'm not quite done, which I thought I was, I thought no more, this is it, I'm done. But my wife is quite a bit younger than me and still a little active. And then Claire came into our lives and she is just this bona fide little star that is so filled with hope and promise that it kind of brought me out of the shell a little bit. And it's like, okay, well, let's do this thing. Plus I think both Ellen and I have something to contribute to her and her pursuit of whatever. Well, I was going to say stardom, but Claire's not really, she doesn't care about being a star that much. She cares about the art of both music and film. So that's what that is. And art, that's the thing, Mike. I mean, you know, thank you for mentioning posting all the paintings on the social media. I mean, art is something I can honestly believe in. I believe in art. I believe in the expression of the artist. He perceives something beyond maybe his own understanding and then portrays that for all of us to share and be transcended. You know, it's transcendent. And then it's, I don't know, glimpses of God. Call it whatever you want. I mean, you know, I just love art. I think there's truth and beauty in art.
I have to fess up, James. When I originally reached out to you and asked if you'd consider being on the podcast, which is about a year ago now, by the way, because I hadn't quite retired, I also shared with you that I'm going to start painting watercolors, and from very, very gifted artist out of Fargo, Ellen Dietrich. She's very, very talented. I bought the supplies, I bought her books, I even subscribed to her online teaching course. That's as far as I've gotten for a number of reasons. Not that I'm putting things off, but, and this is not a slam on Ellen, but you couldn't hear. You cannot hear her at all as she's trying to walk you through. Here's how you start. And I didn't want to waste the supplies, waste time. I thought, I'm going to find a way to do this. So I'm just fessing up because I told you I'm going to do this, and I haven't done it yet, James, but I will, guaranteed.
Your soul will thank you.
Corey, is he still involved in that industry?
No, you know, both Corey and Lucas pursued, you know, Lucas had some, my oldest son and my middle son, and Jake, they're all three kind of a little bit affiliated. Not Lucas anymore. He moved back to Denver. He followed his heart, married a woman, and moved back to Denver, and they're doing, you know, real estate right now, primarily. But Corey also has children to raise and stuff like that. As you know, there's not a lot of money in people asking you to do things for free, and that's what artists always get. You know, I mean, you're a musician. You know that. I'm sure you were asked plenty of times, hey, Mike, why don't you come and you can play at our event and you'll get great exposure. Of course, we're not going to pay you anything, you know. That's kind of the, and it's still the rule out here. And there are so many artists out here, actors, writers, you know, whatever, that are willing to work for nothing, that people take advantage of that. So Corey, you know, he's still writing, not as actively as he was. And Jacob, my youngest son, is he's a stage manager over at 20th Century Fox Studios. So he's kind of affiliated with the biz too. But no. Yeah. So no, not actively pursuing it anymore. No, nobody, none of them, like, not within the industry, you know.
I've got to share this only because I've never publicly mentioned this before. And this is kind of a spanking for someone. To your point, people ask you to play all the time and you like people, so you go play, and rarely is there money being thrown around unless there's a tip jar or you've been hired, right? So you're just playing because you love music and you love people. Well, about 25 years ago, maybe 24, this guy asked me to sit in with this little combo that he has. I did it 3 times. And about a month after the 3 times that we played, I found out he had been paid, and that he paid the other musicians. I got a hold of him. I said, what are you doing? Why, you know, you didn't play every song. You only played. I said, well, you know, here's the deal. When there's money being thrown around, you throw it to everybody. What kind of a guy are you, you know? Oh, gosh. Oh, now I'm pissed off again. God dang, I shouldn't have done that to my...
Oh, Namah Shivaya.
COVID and the, you know, the industry out in everywhere hit, but in how did the people, your peers, your colleagues in the industry, how did they survive when nothing, especially in California, a little bit different than North Dakota, as you know well, nothing was happening? How did people survive?
Well, the nothing was happening isn't quite true. I mean, there was a lot of, and you know, the pretty on the liberal side out here most of the times, these production groups and crews and stuff. You know, that even prior to the vaccines, though, there were tests, and they would ensure that everybody was not, you know, infected, and there were masks on the set, and they would still do some shooting. I mean, not to the degree that was happening before, but people did get around that a little bit. But no, I mean, I don't know, to be honest with you, Mike, because I've reached a point in my life where I'm practically agoraphobic. I don't even like to go out anymore. And so I don't really know. And a lot of my friends, like Lauren, I'd mentioned him earlier, he's semi-retired. I mean, they'll call him up and ask him, do you want to work on this script? Are you interested in this? Are you interested in that? And he'll say yay or nay. But for the most part, it was a grind to a halt. Like everywhere else, people just didn't work.
Yeah, I know in the music industry, again, because of technology, a lot of folks, like Leland Sklar. Leland is, I don't know, 77, 76, one of the most prolific bassists during our lifetime. He's played with James Taylor, Phil Collins, all of them. You think, you know, all sorts of them. And he's one of the guys that started a YouTube channel. And I saw, and frankly, I spent way too much time going down those rabbit holes. I watched way too many YouTube videos of some of my favorite musicians because I just love listening and watching them play, right? And it's kind of like your own private concert. Here, kind of like what we're doing right now. And so I thought to myself, I wonder if people in performance other than music did something similar. And then they'd have their tip jar, their PayPal right there. So if you wanted to contribute, you could. And they sold merch, for example, like that. That's what this shirt is, for example. Yeah. But you don't think they did much of that, probably.
I don't know. And I know, for instance, Claire, who's our young protege, who is very actively, but I know that everything she does, even her auditions, even still are done Zoom, you know? And, in fact, I helped her the other day. She had to do a Zoom audition and asked me if I would, you know, read the other part for her, which I did. And, you know, she sent in the Zoom audition and she gets the part. Everything she auditioned for, she gets. So, Oh, yeah. And then, you know, there's the virtual, like Ellen had mentioned to me, there's a virtual choir. She's in a San Fernando Master Chorale, which, by the way, she got into through Meg Foss, a friend of ours from Fargo. We grew up with so many talented people in Fargo, North Dakota, Mike Seminary. Can you? I mean, I'm speaking to one of them right now. You know, I mean, I get thrills following the careers and lives of my dear friends as well. I mean, I can't tell you how proud I was that you were mayor of Bismarck, you know, and stuff like that. I mean, that's a, you know, whatever. So I guess I digress all over the place. But yeah, there's a lot of virtual auditioning going on. And the virtual choir is, you know, they just record pieces in their privacy. Like Ellen will record on this setup that I'm talking to you on right now. And then she will send in the recording to the artistic director, the master chorale. And then they put all of these individual performances together as a choir. And it worked pretty good. So whether or not they can do that, you can't really do that with a film, though. You know, you can't really do that way. So most of the films, I think, you know, I mean, there were closed sets and they were very careful about the COVID thing and all that sort of thing. So there was work that was going on, but not to the degree that it normally does, not even still. And you know, I don't know. Most of the I know, for instance, Jacob. I mentioned earlier, who was at 20th Century Fox, he got like 6 months, pretty much he was only on call. He worked from home. You know, it's hard to work from home when you're a stage manager at a movie studio. But he did. He worked from home. And then, you know, he would have to go in sometimes. But basically, it was 6 months of, you know, virtual work.
What's the name of the trio?
Well, we just call ourselves Sunday Blues.
Where's it going to go? What are you thinking? I'm so intrigued, James.
Well, I, to be honest with you, I don't know where it's going to go, and I don't care. I have a whole bunch of fun sitting with my wife and Claire. We rehearse in our living room, and we have a bunch of songs that are going through. They asked us back after the first show. They said, "Wait, will you guys please come back?" And they said, can you do love songs next time? So now we have to learn a whole bunch of new love songs. But, I mean, for me, I love music. And I'm a hack guitar player and a hack singer. But I just love music. So I can do it with a little bit of passion, which I maybe make translates to interesting. But Ellen and Claire are world-class vocalists. So all I have to do is sit up there. And I don't even have to look good, you know. So I don't have to worry about that. All I have to do is sit between them and let them sing and nod. Clap my hands, play a little harmonica or guitar sometimes. That's it.
Well, I just had the privilege of seeing your wife, Ellen, before we started, and she is gorgeous. I haven't seen Claire, and if she is gorgeous as well, you don't have to do much. I mean, if they're really talented and they look really good, you just have to be there.
All I do. That's all I do. Kind of all I've done all my life, Mike, is just show up.
This is totally off subject. Thomas Gold, speaking of talented people.
Yes, our good friend Thomas, yes.
I just finished his latest book, and now I can't think of the name of it. Shirafka? Something like that.
Yeah, because it's an Azerbaijani word that means something I can't remember. I've read it too. So
something architectural in context. He is one of the most amazing people I've had the pleasure of knowing. His life story, I think, so I'm going to ask you, I think part of his life would make a very interesting movie.
100%. 1,000%. I mean, just for instance, I mean, I know that you've probably read all his books too. The diaries I had a hard time with, the Azerbaijan, Chechen, and Georgia diaries, because of all the names and the words and the language, it's a hard slog. But Assassinating Shakespeare, that one. Right, I mean his recounting of his traveling through Europe and Africa, and doing the plays in the marketplaces. Yeah, that alone would be a fantastic movie.
Getting arrested, looking for Brother Eddie. Oh, it just would be precious.
Yeah, for sure it would.
So again, before we get off the subject, who would play Thomas today? Now he's 25, 26, 27. Who would play Thomas today?
Yeah, that would be tough because I don't know that many young actors. The first thing that came to my mind when you said that, of course, he's too old to play that Thomas, would be another Tom Hardy.
Oh, yeah.
He'd be a good Tom because Tommy was, if you remember, he was a rough and rugged, adventurer, sort of AKA Hemingway a little bit, I suppose, except more on the journalistic than the fiction side. A hard drinking, passionate guy, whenever Tom would come to, or Thomas, I should be proper that he prefers Thomas, would come to Los Angeles, which was relatively frequent. One time, I'm sorry, this is a little, I got in pretty tight with the Armenian community here in Los Angeles. It was like, living in Yerevan sometimes Tom was really tight with the Azerbaijani community, and they're mortal enemies. Them and the Armenians and the Azerbaijanis and the Turks, they're all like enemies, ancient enemies that goes beyond my understanding. I mean, and one time I took Tom to meet a friend of mine, owned a trash company, and I took him in, and I didn't realize that his reputation preceded him. And people actually came up to me and go, "Why is Tom Turk here? Get him out of here." These were the regular folk, my educated, and listen, that sounds so presumptuous and pretentious, but most of my educated Armenian friends were interested in Tom and Thomas and what he had to say and where he had been, the Oil Odyssey and all that kind of thing. It was fascinating to them, but the run-of-the-mill regular folk, they did not like, they referred to him as Tommy the Turk.
Yep.
And they had no time for that. And what was he doing it's like, whoa, I'm sorry, I had no idea. So Tom and I kind of got a kick out of that, but everybody else didn't.
He's been in plenty of danger during the course of his pursuits. And
he kind of revels in it.
Oh, man. When you want to be a journalist reporter at that level, you have to put yourself into harm's way, or you're not going to get the information or the story, or you'll never build the relationships. Easy for me to say that, because sometimes when I'm reading his books, I start sweating, thinking, oh man, you are in real trouble.
I know.
By the way, as we're sitting here, is there any way for you to grab the music? Is it on... Can you play it right now into a microphone while we're sitting here? Is there any way to do that?
Maybe. Ellen, who's just leaned in here and gave me the thumbs up, I think that she's going to maybe see if she can't try to do that.
That would be a lot of fun. So while we're waiting for that, I have a tendency to ask a magic wand question. And going back to our original conversation, you're one of the really few people that I know personally that pursued a living and career in performance. Well, Thomas did too, for that matter, at one point in time. If you could wave a magic wand over the heads of young people, the age of James Ford, when you decided, not when you were watching Rin Tin Tin, but a little bit later, that want to pursue acting or parts of the industry at that level as a career, what would you really want them to know about what's in front of them?
Well, I would want them to know, first of all, not to listen to the negativity of other actors or other people in the thing. I mean, because people are going to tell you how horrible it is and how hard it is. And all of this, stay away from negativity. Just stay away from it is what I would say first and foremost. Because, you know, people are going to, and it's so competitive out here and, you know, really, I mean, you do need to hang out with other actors and other performers. I mean, this is, you do need to do that. But I just would tell them, and I told my sons this too, when Lucas first came out here, boom, 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 he did like 3 or 4 movies in the first year he was out here, and a dating game show and a bunch of other things. Because I told him, Lucas, don't listen to the other actors. They're going to tell you how hard it is and how you need this and you need that before you can do anything. I said, be young and dumb. And just show up and don't know that you can't do it. Know that you can. And it kind of worked for him. And that's what I would say first and foremost. Listen, following your heart and following what your dreams are, I think is really important in this life. I really honestly do. I think that we are unsatiated if we don't a little bit. Even if we don't. Look, I don't think that there's failing or winning or failing when you do that. I think it's all win, you know? I mean, I have not made oodles of money as an actor, and I haven't, you know, I did have a couple movies made, but didn't make oodles of money there either. But that was never, ever the point, you know? It's doing. Don't talk about it. Do it.
Yeah, that not listening to, I call those people dream stealers. There are people that, for whatever, sometimes it's, with good intention, like a parent might say, yeah, do you really want to do that? Because they're concerned about your welfare, or they did it themselves. It didn't work out the way they wanted. And so they don't want you to experience the kind of failure that they did. But to your point, by the way, failure is a great way to learn. Just because something didn't, you weren't victorious doesn't mean you're a loser. You just learned something really important.
Amen, Michael.
Yeah. So you're right. There are dream stealers, plenty of them. Especially those that are competing with us in something. They're not vampires. Go ahead.
No. I just threw that term out there. I call them, a lot of people, energy vampires.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, if you're
what
ready.
Do you do? Just press it?
Yep.
Which one is this?
This is Tower of Song beginning.
I'd rather do Blue Moon if we could. Okay. We can do this.
Do them both.
Do both. Okay, we'll do a little bit of this one. I'll turn it on now.
Okay, you go ahead.
I put it in proper cable. Now, this song was written by a gentleman named Leonard Cohen.
This is a long...
It's not long.
Can you get it a little closer to the mic?
First, not that that really matters, but he was 20 years my senior, and he passed away not too long ago. And at the end of his stellar, stellar, beautiful career, he'd written all these magnificent songs like Suzanne Chelsea Hotel, and his accountant was a shyster, and at 80 years old, he found out he had no money left. It had been stolen, so at 80 years old, he did another tour. He toured the world at 80 years old, and I did not, unfortunately, see it, but a good friend of mine did. He said it was just magnificent. This man is one of my heroes, and when he was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, his speech was just the lyrics of this song. And there is a secret. We're going to show it. Reveal. Yeah. But we'll listen. But let's see how it looks first. Well, my friends are gone. And my hair is gray. And I ache in places where where I used to play, and I'm crazy for love, but I'm not coming on. I'm just paying the rent, everything in the tower, so I said to Hank Williams, how lonesome does it get? Hank Williams hasn't answered yet, but I hear him popping.
Okay, that's enough of that one.
Okay. Let's
see if you can find that Blue Moon with the harmonica. I wanted the harmonica.
Sounds
thing.
Good.
Our harmonica players together since.
Sounds good.
That's. I want them. You know, she picked one of the songs that I sang. They're way better.
In the 50s, in the 60s, in the 70s, somebody has made this song a hit in that decade. And so we're going to try to do it for you now. And these angels are going to sing it. And we'll start like this.
There it is.
Oops.
Is that Ellen?
That's Claire.
Claire.
Here's Ellen now, right?
Nope. Oh. I remember it's Claire.
Those are the old people singing along.
I love it.
There's Ellen. Those old guys. Here they are together. Can we just go to the end?
Yeah.
Okay. It's almost the end here. Is this it? I hear that. Listen to her go up there. Okay, that's good.
That's it.
Oh, I love it. Oh, yeah. At the end, was that Ellen or Claire?
Claire.
That was Claire.
Okay. Ah, you guys are, we got to get you booked.
Well, that was the first thing that we'd ever done anywhere. It's the first time I'd ever played in front. I as an actor, I sing and play all the time, but it's a role. But when you don't have the mask, when you don't have the facade of a character that you're playing, it's much more difficult, because, you're standing out there naked, this is just me. And so it's kind of more difficult. But anyway, it's kind of thrilling and kind of fun and kind of something to do and brought me out of my, you know, self-imposed hermitage. So that was a good thing.
Oh, I'm glad you're doing it. And thanks for playing. Thanks for having it ready to go, Alan. I appreciate that very much. That was awesome. When are you playing again?
Well, probably not until January. After the first of the year, they asked us to come back in January and do some songs for them. And you know, Claire has these friends over at this place called the Jazz Cafe. I don't know if we're kind of any ready for that because, you know, I mean, whatever. I don't know, ready or not ready. I mean, it's fun to play. And these girls can really, really, really sing. And
here's a short little clip.
One more short little clip.
Here
okay.
Goes.
Hear all those old people singing
around. Oh, yeah.
They just loved it, man. They just loved it. Okay, that's good.
Thanks, Ellen.
You're welcome.
And you know, the thing is Ellen and Claire look alike. You know, so they could be mother and daughter very, very easily. You know, she's only 20, Claire. And I won't say how old Ellen is, but significantly younger than me.
So when was the last time you had performed with somebody?
Gee, I don't know. Long time ago. My niece, when my daughter-in-law, Jules, married to Jacob, Jules is an actress and a writer and a filmmaker, quite frankly, and she and her partner wrote this script called The Bettles, and I have a niece, pretty successful Hollywood writer, but she aspires to be a director. And so she directed it, and that was a couple of years ago now. We got into the Hollywood short film, what do you call those, festival, short film festival, and, you know, placed, I don't know, second or whatever in that. And yeah, so I guess that was a couple of years ago. But that was acting. I've never performed musically with anybody before.
James, I'm having so much fun. As I was running this morning, when I wasn't thinking about Leon Russell and you, I was trying to think of the last time we actually saw each other, and I don't remember when that was. It's been a long, long time.
Yeah, it has. Well, I can't remember when that might have been either. You know, probably when I was living in Fargo before. When did you leave Fargo?
85.
Okay. Yeah.
So you were already gone.
I was gone, but I was back in Fargo in 84 and 85. You know, we don't need to go into that. That was during the breakup of my family. I mean, you know, yeah. It was a horrible time for me. But it just so happened when I got back to Fargo at that time, I thought I was on my way to New York and did a stint in Fargo. And I don't know if I'm pretty sure you know Kristen Rudrud.
Yes. Yes.
She was back because she had just done Amadeus on Broadway. And so I came back to Fargo to sort of get my head together. And before I went out to New York and Chris was in town. And so we sort of like hooked up, became really good friends at that time. And we used to, you know, because she was a crazy actor, you know, performer, you know, very, you know, out there. Chris is really brilliant. I just think she's brilliant. And so we would get together and, you know, redo readings and you know, try to write scripts and I don't know, that sort of thing. I don't know why I brought that up. That was in 84 or 85. And so that was, you know, maybe it could have been the last opportunity to see you.
Yeah. She just lost her mother, by the way.
I know.
And for people that might not be as familiar with that name, she starred in this movie that made North Dakota kind of famous called Fargo. Well, James, thanks so much. We'll have to do this again. Hopefully that download of the clips will come through, and I'll open and close the podcast with that. That would be great. If it doesn't work, at least we have the music embedded in the podcast. That was awesome.
Well, that was pretty cool. And I was, to tell you the truth, I was a little uptight about all this, Mike. I mean, not about talking to you. You and I talk, and we can jabber for a long time. But I just, this was different, but it was fun. And I really appreciate it. And I want you to know too, Mike, that, you know, it's really cool the way you have maintained your friendships and relationships with so many people over the years. You're a really positive human being. I mean, you have a beautiful family. I live vicariously through my friends, especially in my lately self-imposed hermitage. And your daughters are just absolutely gorgeous and talented. Your wife, like my wife, is probably too good for you. But, we both got really, really, really lucky. And one of the things that I think reasons that why you got lucky and I got lucky is because you're so positive, Mike. You're just a really positive force in the world. And I think that that's really, really important. It's thy will be done, not mine. That's what I say.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, James. Likewise, you're the same type of person. And, you know, life's too short not that there aren't times that things get to you, but life's too short not to be positive, not to share good vibes, not to, to your point, what more is there, right?
You know? No, I know. Yeah, I agree.
Well, thanks for joining me, James. This has been just an absolute pleasure for me.
It's a pleasure for me, too. I really enjoyed it. So we'll talk again soon, okay?
You bet. Thank you for joining us today. You are profoundly appreciated. Where would I be without the team at Q1 Network? Anna DeVere, Ashley Harris, Bo Hastings, and Marlo Anderson. And my wife, Deb. Deb really orchestrates all of this for me. I have an incredible wife, partner, and friend. Thanks again for listening to Mike Seminary and Friends. Until we chat again, love y'all.